I think if you put a winner take all $1 million for All-Star Weekend in a one-on-one tournament. Now, I want to know the reason. I want to know the reason why you not playing. If we put that up on the table, now when guys say they don't want to participate in the dunk contest or they're not going to participate because they need rest.
Right.
Now Rick Bucher and BJ Armstrong can come on the show and say, we don't know if this guy really want to compete.
Rick Bucher.
But imagine, like, you have East versus West, but now LeBron and Kawhi go out there and they go one-on-one. And then Steph and Kyrie go one-on-one.
Where do I sign up for
that? And you have, like, team numbers. I mean, you're contributing to your team total, and then it's a team result. Wouldn't you love watching that?
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to episode 33 of the BJ and Bucher podcast. You missed the best part of the show probably in the previous 2 minutes because BJ Armstrong, came in hot. His mic was up too far and he was spitting rhymes. To start off, before we get to the first quarter, we're in the pregame warm-up line. Do you have anything for us? Can you show us a little something?
Y'all give me a beat. Give me a beat and let me go in. Shane, can I get a beat?
Man, you're supposed to have a beat.
Yeah,
right,
you were supposed to bring your own beat. What are you talking about?
Hey,
oh, man.
You know, if I did have a beat, I probably would say something like, I'm terribly innovative, courageously creative. I'm driven. This gift comes naturally to had to the native. Now, I'm just going to leave it right there just to let y'all know I got bars. But bring me a beat and let me go in.
I think that was 4 bars, not 16, but you proved your point. Thank you very much. Just letting y'all know,
I keep bars.
That was strong. All right. So let's go on. I don't know if we can go on, but we're going to try to go on to the first quarter going around the league as we always do. And it is NCAA tourney time. And I just want to take the big picture, BJ. I can tell you, as an NBA analyst, I have purposely set myself up so that I don't have to do mock drafts. I don't have to pretend that I've been watching these guys for years and years and years or forge an opinion based on watching the NCAA tournament because I just don't watch enough college basketball. And I know that how deceiving the tournament in particular can be because it's so different from the rest of the year. So I always wait until I see guys in summer league and then I determine what I think they're going to be as pros. But you as an agent, you're looking at these guys and you've been looking at them long before the tournament.
Right.
I just wonder how you watch the NCAA tournament.
Well, the first thing I try to watch as an agent is to see their effect on winning. You know, winning covers a multitude of sins, Rick, and we put so much emphasis now on stats and analytics and numbers and what people are doing individually. But the bottom line in sports is winning. Winning is the X factor in this game. You know, the bottom line is performance, and I look for players that have an effect on winning. So with the impact of so many young players leaving school, I look for the team or the players on that team that can affect to get that team to the Final Four or to the Sweet 16. That's really going to, you know, have an effect on the bottom line because that's what you're looking to do.
And how much, because I know that you are rather judicious when it comes to, you're not just going after everybody and anybody and seeing who you can sign as a client. You're looking for particular type of guys who fit with your profile and that fit with your profile of what might lead to success at the NBA level. So how do you, like, and I don't even know where the recruiting process is. Like, are there agents, you know, floating around the NCAA tournaments trying to hook with guys? Where in the process of getting with a particular client are you at this point?
I learned a long time ago as a player and as an executive, there are two things in this league that doesn't fail. You know, talent. What I mean by talent is, you know, anything that a player can do on a consistent basis. You know, anyone can have a hot night. Anyone can have a good game. But can you do that consistently?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, can you score 10 to 12 points consistently every single night, every game, whether it's the playoffs, game 7, regular season? Can you consistently do something every night?
No.
Now, I look for that, you know, first and foremost. What can this player do? You know, take Draymond Green as an example. Ever since I saw Draymond Green play at Michigan State, he consistently rebounded the basketball. He was very consistent with his ability to pass as an interior player. And he's been, and those things translate from one level to the next. The second thing I look for, which you can't teach, which is tough. Talent and toughness is what this league is all about. You know, our guest, Matt Barnes, he has toughness.
Yeah.
Draymond Green, tough. All the great players and players that have had a career in this league have all had a mental toughness. You may not see the physical toughness of a Reggie Miller. You know, he was slight of build, but mentally, he was a tough kid and he came to play every single night. So I look for talent, I recruit toughness, and that's what I do. That fits my personality because those type of players have an effect on the bottom line in this league. So as I'm looking at the college players this year, there's a lot of talent in this year's draft. This is going to be a great draft to be, especially at the top of the draft. But you know what? How many of these players are tough has yet to be determined. I think we'll learn a little something here in this next week as we start entering into the tournament play. So those are the two things that I look for with every player. And talent may get you in the league, but it's not going to keep you in it.
I'm glad you mentioned at the top of the show, we normally let people know who our guest is going to be, although on the billboard, they generally know going in. But Matt Barnes, who is the latest greatest warrior to be added to their roster, is being counted on to help them fill the gap while Kevin Durant is out. He is going to be our guest in the fourth quarter, talking about experience with Sacramento, experience at the explanation for why or how Matt Barnes seems to be two different people. People have such varying opinions about him, what it's like to go from a team like the Kings to the Warriors in a heartbeat, and what it means for him to be back with the Warriors where he essentially began his career, and as well as just being the tough type of player who's willing to take that assignment every day.
Very rarely does a player who plays football in high school or even college and decides to play or has an opportunity to play in the NBA. That always works for some reason. You know, Matt Barnes was a phenomenal high school football player.
He was on the verge of going back and seeing if he could get tryouts in the NFL when he was signed by the We Believe Warriors in 2006. He was about to go back to his football career.
Yeah, so you see, guys like Nate Robinson, Allen Iverson, LeBron James. So when you see guys who play football, that toughness, I think, carries over. You know, you don't play football on Sunday afternoon without toughness. That's why I love watching the NFL. So I think it carries over, and I think it's something that I at least look for when I'm recruiting players.
All right. We were going to talk about the Rookie of the Year, but there is no Rookie of the Year, so we're not going to talk about it.
What do you mean there's no Rookie of the Year? You got to choose some Rick. Who are you going to the Rookie of the Year? We can't just say there's no Rookie of the Year. I mean, someone's got to win Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, somebody has to, but that doesn't mean that there's a Rookie of the Year.
Rick, I'm with you when you're right.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, look, somebody's going to win. I think whoever wins, I would not want to win it.
Who are the options out there?
Dario Saric is one. Some people are still thinking that Joel Embiid. What bothers me about this is that people thought that Joel Embiid was a lock done. He's the Rookie of the Year. And while he showed an amazing amount of talent, I'm sorry, when a guy's playing every other game or like he's on a minutes restriction, I can't not weigh that in, that you don't have to play every night. You don't have to compete every night. That's part of the challenge. I mean, Jamal Murray is a guy who I think has had a tremendous impact for the Denver Nuggets. I've been really impressed by the way he's played. That's a guy that I'd go with Joel Embiid, just because he's had to be part of that equation and he's on a team that's vying for a playoff spot.
Well, he certainly, I think he had sort of a breakout game during the sophomore game?
The U.S. versus the world?
Yeah, I thought he had one of those moments where, you know, it was a confidence booster for him to, like, let him know that he belongs.
Right.
But, you know, I've watched him all year. He plays hard.
He's a solid rookie. For a rookie, he's solid.
And you know what? And he's playing on a winning team. And I think those winning habits that you form early in your career, I think they stay with you. So the fact that he is contributing to a winning team and they're competing in the West, I think will serve him well in his career. So
Fair enough. All right, we talked about it more than we should have. Let's go to the second quarter. I don't even know how to approach this. This is Andre Iguodala, who was, when he was asked about the Warriors sitting all of their stars, including Iguodala, for the game against the San Antonio Spurs, which was supposed to be a marquee Saturday night game, and turned out that the Warriors rested everybody after losing by one point to the Timberwolves the night before. The Spurs weren't playing Kawhi Leonard because he was in concussion protocol. Tony Parker, LaMarcus Aldridge were also out for various reasons. And Iguodala expressed surprise that they were sitting and that he was sitting, and said, in reference to Steve Kerr, whatever the master want. And obviously, a black man referring to a white man and using master raises all sorts of flags and, well, what do you mean by that? And sort of racist slavery terminology. And Steve Kerr was asked about it. I don't know why Andre Iguodala wasn't asked about it, but Steve Kerr was asked about it and said, you were just Andre'd. Didn't really give an explanation as to why Andre would use it, but said that it was an inside joke on the team.
Right.
And then later, Andre doubled down and was asked, and I'm forgetting now exactly what it was in reference to, but he was saying, they want us talking like dumb N-words, then that's what they want, then that's what they're going to get. And I'm just confused, BJ, because while Steve can, you know, cast it off to an inside joke, or that Andre is just, this is Andre, and sometimes he can be cryptic. For me, this is just too sensitive a subject and too important a subject to joke around or to dismiss with an inside joke. I take it too seriously. It bothers me when people play the race card incorrectly, because then it dumbs down the entire conversation and the need for the racism in this world, including the NBA, to be addressed. So when you see and hear all that, as a black man, I wonder, how do you view what Andre is doing and saying?
Well, you know, first, I know Andre and I know Steve Kerr. And I know Andre very well, growing up there in Springfield, Illinois. And I've known Steve Kerr over 25 years, dating back to our college days. I definitely hear the words. I see the words. I heard what was said. I wasn't there, obviously, but I get it. And I get what Andre was trying to say. And a lot of times now, you know, we take the words and then we put and project onto words what we want them or understand them to mean. In no shape, form, or fashion is Andre Iguodala saying anything against Steve Kerr.
I believe that.
In no shape, form, or fashion. Now, I think what he was really saying was, you know what? This is a really, I don't like to use the word dumb, but this was a question, or, you know, it's almost like he was insulted by the question.
Which part? Which part? The part about resting and not knowing that he was going to be rested? I mean, I don't know. This is the problem. I don't know what he was making fun of. I don't know what it was in reference to.
We just got the question and the answer, and then now we're going to project on what we think is going on. I've been in too many locker rooms where things get taken out of context, and then we start focusing on the content or the words and what was said, and then we're going to project to another situation onto this. No, I get what Andre was saying, and I get that, you know what, whatever was said, maybe he could have chose a different words because of the sensitivity of the words, but yeah, those words don't affect me at all, okay? And I get it. Like, I get it as a former player. I get it as a person who've been in locker rooms my entire life. I get that, you know what, that Andre and Steve Kerr have a very, very special relationship, and they can probably say things to one another that probably people can't say to each other because of their friendship. And I'm sure their friendship goes beyond color. I'm sure of that. Now, to the outside world that don't really understand, that may look like, what are they talking about? What's going on?
Right,
But, you know, you got a glimpse of probably something that's just in their locker room, and they let you see it. And all of a sudden now we're going to go, oh, what's going on? No.
Here's the thing, too, though. And to clarify, his comments about, you know, playing the dumb N-word role. I can't even bring myself to use. I've never been able to use the word. The dumb N-word role was in response to a reporter asking after the Timberwolves loss what had caused it. And I
What had caused the loss.
And I totally get the frustration. First of all, you just lost a game. And then somebody says, what caused it? And his first comment was, we got to score more than the other team. So there's often where the questions are so simplistic or so, like, they're not understanding of the NBA. And I get when players get so tired of hearing the same sort of nonsensical, not well thought out questions or the lazy questions.
Right.
And so guys snap, and you know, I can totally see Andre, you know, one, not happy with the loss. Two, now I got to answer dumb questions. But I understand that frustration. I understand all of it, but I can't agree with it. Sometimes, even though it's a huge responsibility, you just have to be above the stupidity. You have to be above people who aren't doing their job well and not take it someplace where now it confuses something that I think is a much more important issue.
Well, I'm gonna say, you know, it's like the Heisenberg principle. You're good 99 out of 100 times.
Right.
Okay.
And they only remember, yeah.
And they only remember this one time. I mean, sure. Andre is a pro's pro. All right?
Right.
This kid is very thoughtful. He's intelligent. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is a great teammate, a great person. So, you know, I know Andre. So I'm like, okay, whatever. And you move on. I don't know what provoked it. I wasn't there. But I'm sure that whatever was said by this reporter or whoever asked that question. I've been in these situations, and there's a lot of things, you know, sometimes the filter comes off, Rick, sometimes.
Yeah.
And I've heard a lot of responses over the years that I say, thank goodness we didn't have the internet back then.
Yeah.
You know,
and
you know what? Thank goodness. Because we've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Andre, it was just a moment. It's probably just a moment. And I don't even know what it was, but I'm not even thinking twice about it because I know Andre. I know Steve well. And like I said, you don't get to this point without being, you know, a close-knit group.
All right. It's halftime. And this is an interesting conversation because I think all of this will come up again when we talk with Matt Barnes in the fourth quarter as far as appearances and people seeing a small window or those who know him and those who don't. But in the meantime, Shane, our producer, take it away. Give us some halftime entertainment. And when we come back, I don't think it's going to be
I thought I was the I thought I was the entertainment.
It's not going to be Oh, you're the entertainment, all right. You're just not the halftime.
Okay, I was
going to
say.
That's
Shane, if you need me, Shane, I'm right here, baby. I'm right here.
We're going to give you a break and let somebody else entertain us for a couple minutes, and then we'll be back for the third quarter.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, this is the Halftime Break on the BJ and Bucher Podcast, episode 33. Today's Halftime Entertainment is brought to you by De La Soul and their song, Me, Myself, and I. Enjoy.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my De La clothes or is it just my De La Soul? What I do ain't make-believe. People say I sit and try, but when it comes to being De La, it's just me, myself, and I. Just me, myself, and I.
that plug to be himself, not what you read or write. Right is wrong when hype is written on the soul, they lie that. Style is surely our own thing, not the false disguise of showbiz. They lie solely from the soul, and this fact I can't deny. Strictly from the Dan called Stucky, and from me, myself, and I.
All right, hope you enjoyed that halftime entertainment. And now it's time for the third quarter. It's the NBA Trivia Challenge. I believe that BJ currently is...
How'd you guys like that GIF last week?
...the reigning champion. I was impressed that you made a GIF. Beyond that, and I think it was like one of the clutch shots in your career, right? For those who didn't see it. Right? Corner three, right?
Hey, Shane.
Oh, here we go. Hey, Shane. Here we go.
I'm just gonna let Rick talk. I ain't gonna even say nothing. All right, let's move on to the trivia.
Here we go. Yeah. Let's just move on. That was BJ Armstrong hitting the three, challenging me in the trivia today. Had to. Here's my question for you. Despite being forced to retire somewhat early due to knee issues, I still managed to play 12 seasons, became an All-Star once, and averaged more than 19 points per game over the course of my career. Who am I? Antoine Jameson, Jamal Mashburn, or Damon Stoudemire? I got to say, you outdid yourself on this one, Shane.
Yeah, that's a good one. Who give me the three again. Jamal Mashburn, who was the other?
Damon Stoudemire and Antoine Jameson.
Man, that's a
12 seasons, 19 points per game, All-Star.
I'm going to say Antoine.
And that would not be correct. Wow. Who? He was a two-time All-Star.
Okay.
Jamal Mashburn is the answer.
The Monster Mash.
19 points per game.
Yeah, that's a good one,
and
Shane.
And was only a one-time
Shane,
All-Star.
That was a good one, Shane. Okay, that was a good one.
All right.
In 1992, Sports Illustrated selected me as College Basketball Player of the Year over Christian Laettner.
What year?
1992.
Okay.
Over Christian Laettner, Shaquille O'Neal, and Alonzo Mourning. I was supposed to be one of the best players of my draft, but in 1996, injuries forced me into early retirement. Who am I? Harold Miner, Todd Day, Adam Keith, Leek Seely.
That is good.
Shane got all too right, much say, time right now. These are good.
No
man, we
got to
get him working.
That is really good. Give it to me one more time. Give me the question one more time. I don't need the names.
In 1992, Sports Illustrated selected me as College Basketball Player of the Year. In 1996, injuries forced me into early retirement. Harold Miner, Todd Day, Adam Malik Seely.
Well, it was too early. I want to say it was too early. It was way too early for Adam Keith. Oh, Adam Keith. I was thinking of Adam Morrison.
Yeah. Exactly.
Adam Keith. Ooh, that changes everything. The Stanford Redhead.
Adam Keith was a beast.
But then there was Harold Miner. Because Adam Keith was like, he ended up getting taken like seventh that year. 1992. I want to say that Harold Miner came a little bit later, too. I'm going to say Adam Keith.
That would be incorrect. The correct answer is Harold Miner.
Damn it!
Can we keep this PG for the kids, please?
Had to. Seriously?
Had to.
Hey. Look, you ain't appearing on Nickelodeon anytime soon, okay?
Hey.
So.
Hey, there's no pop over here.
The rap stylings of Had To, appearing on Nick at Night.
Whoa. Don't disrespect that and say rap. Don't disrespect this and say rap.
Hip-hop.
Here we go.
Here we go. Okay. All right.
Underground, all right. To be specific.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, way underground. All right. Brad Daugherty retired at what age after being plagued with back issues in 1994? 27, 28, 30, or 31?
I'm just going to say 30. I have no idea.
28 is the answer. He was a 16-year-old college freshman at UNC. I did not know that. Very interesting.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Started way early.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He did. That's right. I. You know what? I did know that. I don't know why I knew that, but I did know that. Okay. All right.
For the win! Sampson.
Ralph Sampson was how old when he decided to call it quits due to back and knee injury? 29, 31, 32, 34.
I don't know why this number popped in my head before you even started giving the options. So I am just going to go with it. 32.
That is correct.
That's crazy. The hell you guessed that, man?
Instead of had to, you're now going to be was. He was. He was the champion. He...
Hey, BJ, come on now. Come on now. You're going to take that beat.
Hey, this is a public service announcement.
Has been retired. It's like Snoop Dogg.
This is a public service announcement. And right now, Rick Bucher, you are now being tested. So it is important to expect right now for me to drop like Burns, and it's unexpected. Because hip-hop spoke to me and it was corrected. And then I became well-rested after everything I talk and when I breathe on it. So I just blessed it. Now, Rick Bucher, if you really want some of this, I can give it to you now, however you want it. Now, had to is turned up now.
No, had to is was. Just like Snoop became Snoop Lion. This is the version of All right, well, it's our great pleasure to introduce to the BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness, our guest for this week, and it is none other than Matt Barnes. You know him from We Believe, you know him from Sacramento, Orlando, a bunch of different places, but he's now back with the Golden State Warriors, and he is now on the BJ and Bucher podcast. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time. We were just talking about you driving around looking for a place to hang your hat here in the Bay Area. That's no easy thing, especially if you're looking for a short-term situation.
Yeah, you know, it's good stuff to take it, and also the really nice stuff is for sale, so I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, but I'll find something.
No doubt.
Now, what do you think, Matt, has allowed you to be in the league this long? You see so many guys who get drafted high, don't stick. Then you see guys who drafted low and have wonderful careers. What do you think has been the main reason that you've been able to play this long in the NBA?
I think a lot of it has to do with luck. I've stayed relatively healthy throughout, this 16 years. But really, I think understanding my role early on, you know, coming into the second round pick and then not making it, you know, that D-League really gave me that extra fire because I knew that D-League wasn't the life I, aspired for. But really just understanding what teams need. You know, everyone wants to come in and try to be Kobe or Steph or Kevin Durant, and there's very few guys like that on the planet. You know, and I remember one thing that Doc Rivers told me is, you know, be a star in your role. You know, you don't have to be a superstar or an all-star, but you can always be a star in your role. And, you know, from day one, really, once I got in the league, I understood that what I had to do to get on the court, one, and two, to stay. And I think I've just mastered being a role player, and it's allowed me to, you know, steal 15 years in this game when I wasn't even supposed to be here to begin with.
How much would you attribute to your football background from embracing that defensive assignment that you take on? I mean, you've taken on the best offensive player every night, and you embrace that from day one of your career. Where did that come from? Where did that mentality to want to guard the other team's best offensive player and accept that role night in and night out in this league?
Just like I said, to find out, you know, okay, how can I get on this court? I knew early on coming in, my offensive skills really weren't really up to NBA standards, but I knew that I could always play defense. And I think, you know, my football background having me be just a very physical, rough player by nature, you know, allowed me to be able to guard, as you mentioned, you know, some of the best players ever to play this game. And it also bought me time in the summertime to be able to develop my offensive game and, you know, be able to do multiple things on the court, you know, be able to shoot, handle the ball, pass, do a little bit of everything. But I, like I said, I think getting my foot in the door with being able to guard people and then being able to expand my game in the summertime through that.
Matt, I had two experiences just recently. One, I was there when you were meeting with the local Warriors media for the first time. And immediately the questions were, well, what are you going to be like off the court? Are you going to be a distraction? How are you going to live down, you know, your history? And then I was at a practice for my son, and there's a father who's a loyal BJ and Bucher podcast listener. And he was there with his son, and I mentioned that we were going to have you on as a guest. And he was like, oh, Matt Barnes, man, his reputation is so different from what we experienced. We went to his camp. He had time for everybody. So how would you explain it? And I know you. I mean, you're a complex dude. I mean, I don't know any other way to explain it, because...
Well, I don't know if he's complex. He's a great guy, man. I don't know if it's complex
or complicated, but Matt, if you wanted to explain to someone how one Matt Barnes is both of those things, or both of those, has the perception of you can live in both places, how would you go about doing that?
All right, you guys got your therapist hats on right now.
we're only like 275 an hour here. We're at 275 an hour.
I just think that I'm often judged. You know the old saying, "Don't judge a book by its cover." So people see tattoos. I have a football mentality on the court. I have a no-nonsense mentality on the court. But at the end of the day, when you see me on the court, you see that it's necessarily never really me. I mean, I'll take the technical fouls here and there, but it's always me taking up for my teammates. And I was just taught early on, my dad was, military, street guy, football guy, but no matter what happened, I always had to take care of my brother and sister. If they got in the fight, I got in the fight. So I learned early on that family is everything. So I treat my teammates like my family. So a lot of people on the court will see me as a thug or a hothead. But more than anything, it's really just out there having my teammates' backs. And, we're going to war together, regardless. So, if you're in it, I'm in it. If you're wrong, I'm going to be wrong with you. If you're right, whatever the case may be, I'm going to help you out in any situation possible. So I think I obviously acquired reputation through that. And, and I always tell people the NBA needs bad guys just like they need the good guys. Mm. So, like I said, being the bad guy has allowed me to live the life I live. It's allowed me to, play the game I love for this long. And it's allowed me to stick in the game, But everyone that knows me off the court knows that, I'm not that person. That person's obviously in me. I've been tried in several situations, and it's just, I'm really just, kind of BJ, like an old school type player. I'm just no nonsense. I respect everybody, but when I'm disrespected, I don't take to that kindly, Right. So I had the Derrick Fisher situation where I was ultimately disrespected, and unfortunately that played out the way it did. But, whenever my kids are involved, it's something I hate to say, but I would do it again, because, a man's respect is all I really ask for. And to be disrespected like that, and be disrespected with my kids involved, that's a no-go for me. You know what I mean? But like the gentleman said, you saw that they came to my camp. I love kids. I love, I have a foundation. I do a lot of charity work. So I just think there's definitely a few different sides to me, but at the end of the day, I am a good person, but I at times I do have a short fuse. It's not that I'm crazy or anything like that. I just have a passion for winning, and I love my teammates, and I treat them like family.
Well, I guess that was the one follow-up that I just had, because I think it's so, whether it's, I guess you're saying that a lot of this is calculated based on the situation, as opposed to people thinking that you have an anger issue that you can't control, that you are out of control. No. You know what I mean?
No, I get that. And I really understand. I mean, I got a degree from UCLA. I understand their view, because they get a small glimpse of me for 2 hours on the court, or, the BS off the court. And the majority of the time, unfortunately, we live in a society where the media just wants to report something. They want to be first. They don't necessarily have to be right. They just want to be first. So a lot of these situations are, well, I'll get into an altercation off the court, and the truth will come out, but the truth is never more exciting than the lie. You know what I mean? So I'll be exonerated or whatever the situation may be, and that would get swept on the rug. But my initial my initial, you know, skirmish will be all over ESPN or all over TMZ, and that's all. That's the only picture that people get of me. So when the truth comes out, it's really kind of swept under the rug. So I just kind of understand that it comes with the territory. And like I said, if being a so-called bad guy, you know, is going to allow me to continue to play this game for a few more years, I guess I can keep that hat on for a couple more years.
Matt, you've seen a lot of offensive players, some great ones. You've taken that matchup every night in this league throughout your career. This year is a very interesting year because now it's a shift. You have, this league now is an offensive-driven league. You have a lot of point guards. In your estimation, who would you pick as the MVP this year?
It's tough. You know, there's obviously the normal people you would say in LeBron, and someone I really think is being slept on is Kawhi Leonard. To me, he's probably the best two-way player in the game, the way he stepped his offensive game up. But then you look at Westbrook and Harden, and I think what both of those guys are doing, you know, obviously Harden's transition to point guard, I think, has really blossomed and brought his game full circle. But then just how amazing Russell Westbrook is night in, night out. And to me, if you take anyone off their team, Oklahoma City suffers the worst, losing Westbrook. And I think, to me, that's kind of how you measure, to me, MVP.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you know, the historical run he's making with these triple-doubles. And he makes it – it was funny. I got my first triple-double last year. And, you know, some people laugh. And this, some people never get triple-doubles in their whole career. And this guy is making – him and Harden are making them seem like it's an everyday thing. And that's – BJ can attest, that is something that's very hard to do. Getting a triple-double is very hard to do, and he's doing it night in, night. They both are doing it night in, night out. He's on that run where he just passed Wilt the other night, I think, and he's chasing Oscar about 10 more away. So, to me right now, the MVP, I would get to Westbrook, and, you know, some people would doubt that, saying that their team is a seventh seed, but just to me, that what he's been able to do this season is, you know, is really history in the making. And, you know, if that team lost him, they would be at the bottom of the West.
One of the other things I wanted to hit before we let you go, and again, appreciate you taking the time, is you're making a bit of a difficult transition here too, I would think, in that you're playing with the Sacramento Kings, a team that doesn't have the same aspirations as the Golden State Warriors, doesn't play the same way or any of that. And in midstream, you have to jump from one to the other and fill a significant role. What is the challenge in that? How do you hope to go about succeeding at that?
You know, we spoke about this the other day, and you know, I really went from, you know, the bottom to the top, and it's a blessing. You know, I still pinch myself. I still don't believe that I'm here. But like you said, goals and aspirations from the top to the bottom are different in this organization. And, you know, my main thing was to be able to come back. This was a team from afar that, you know, I just knew that if I got a chance to play here, this is my kind of team. The way they move the ball, they have people on the court that can play multiple positions. They play together, they have fun, you know. So my thing was really trying to come in and not obviously disrupt the flow on the court, but also not step on any toes in the process. So being a veteran player, I understand, you know, that I just kind of sit back. I've been watching film and just really seeing where I can be most effective. Obviously, I know I need, first and foremost, is defense and rebounding. But just on the offensive end, you know, being a playmaker, knocking down my shots, and really just giving this team an extra tough mentality type player such as Draymond Green.
Well, Matt, I'm so happy for you that you were able to get back here. I know what it means to you, and we're wishing you the best of luck. And I'm hoping a fairy tale ending for you, because I think those who know
absolutely
you know the kind of guy you are, and we're hoping that maybe the rest of the world gets the opportunity to see that guy too.
I hope so, but you know, like, most important to me is, you know, everyone has an opinion, and what's more important to me is my teammates, one, my friends and family that know me, and that they know the real me, and, you know, just I'll have to live with everything else. But I have a tremendous support system and people like you guys that get a chance to know me and understand who I am.
Right.
I really do appreciate you taking the time and trying to spread the good word for me.
You got it.
Absolutely.
Thank
absolutely
you, Matt.
I appreciate it, fellas. Have a good weekend.
Remember, if you're listening on iTunes, be sure to subscribe to the show. Make sure you're subscribing to the right version of our show. We changed RSS feed, so look for the one with the floating heads and the green neon. That is the current one. Otherwise, you won't be getting the correct updates. You won't be getting any updates at all. Also, rate and leave a review. We always want to hear what you have to think. And check out our brand new website, bjandbuecher.com. We've got Q&As with players. We've got articles written. And all the podcasts can be found there, along with other stuff as well. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, at BJ and Buecher. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll do it again next week. Thanks for listening.